You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We're presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, we got a glorious gift from the heavens yesterday. It was Ben Simmons randomly showing up to the Wells Fargo Arena in Philadelphia. So to talk about Ben Simmons' return, I've brought on Derek Bodner, our incredible Philadelphia 76ers beat writer and multi-time guest of the Game Theory Podcast, to talk about the Ben Simmons saga with Philadelphia. Derek, did this just like, what were you thinking when you saw this yesterday?
Well, I mean, you said randomly show up at the Wells Fargo Center, and it really was. He randomly showed up at the Wells Fargo Center. The Sixers did not know he was coming in. The Sixers were in contact with Rich Paul, his agent. They still did not know he was coming in. A lot of the Sixers, both personnel and players, hadn't talked to Ben Simmons, in Joel Embiid's case, literally since the season ended. So nobody had any idea he was going to show up last night. You know, there was obviously the report earlier in the day. Adrian Wojnarowski had it. Our own Sham Sharani at The Athletic had it, that they were progressing towards Ben returning to Philadelphia. Well, that progression towards turned into Ben, like, literally outside of the door, phoning Elton Brand and being like, hey, I'm here. In a matter of hours. I think it was Woj who said that the way that it went down from the Sixers' perspective is Ben was outside of the front door, texted Elton Brand, said he was here to let him in. I mean, it's just, you can't, like, it's absurd. But I'm doing wonderful, Sam. Thank you for having me back on, and we have completely normal basketball to talk about.
Have you seen the video of Woj explaining this to Scott Van Pelt?
I did not. I was driving at the time, and I haven't seen it since.
It is so funny. Like, Woj just has this look on his face. Like, look, I can't believe this is happening either, but it's happening, and I have to report it. It's one of those, like, perfect, like, little talking head TV moments where Woj just has this look on his face like, this is the most ridiculous thing that I can imagine, and it's still happening, and here we are. First and foremost, you hit the nail on the head, right? You said, oh, we're just going to keep covering normal basketball. I mean, like, this 76ers organization, when was the last time there was a normal season?
Well, so last year they changed their GM and their coach, and that was about as normal as it got. And that was, by the way, the COVID year that was shortened, all that stuff. But that was about as normal, because you go back 2 years and you had, all right, well, 2 years ago was semi-normal. Now, granted, that offseason they traded away Jimmy Butler because there was friction between Butler and Simmons, and also Butler and Brett Brown. And they brought in Al Horford to be a backup center for $108 million or whatever. So that was, I guess, just basketball reasons normal. But then 3 years before that was Markelle Fultz forgetting how to shoot. 4 years before that was Ben Simmons breaking his foot. You also had the Colangelo being installed 4 years ago by his father. So no, they're really, like, normalcy isn't our thing, really.
Yeah. It's funny, like, there have been people that were, like, have worked in that front office, like, throughout this whole time. Right. And I just, like, sure, wonder what they think. Like, how do we, would it, like, I wonder if they would know what a normal organization looks like on
no,
some level.
I, I, I have had conversations with people that are both still there and are, have left. And I think they're fully aware that they are not normal. I think they are fully aware that they do not do everything by the book in that organization. And even going back to last season, like, they hired their coach before their GM. Like, you can't even get the simple order of operations right on the most obvious task. It's a unique group of people, for sure.
So, throughout this, you would hear the 76ers have been very transparent through the media with Doc Rivers making multiple statements. If I remember correctly, I think Daryl Morey has even made a statement to this effect, saying, we would like Ben Simmons back. Like, we would like to have him on this roster. Now that this has actually happened, do we, like, think that's true? Like, do we think that they're going to be, like, super happy to just accept Ben back with open arms after this whole thing?
So, I think it's probably a complicated answer. I think, at his core, I think Doc Rivers believed in Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons as a pairing. And I don't know if he's completely given up on that hope. So I think from a basketball perspective, I think Doc Rivers appreciates what Ben Simmons can bring to his club. And from a team building perspective, I think Daryl Morey realizes that he gains leverage and can get to a better potential trade if he can drag this out and make it appear normal through December or maybe even January or February to get closer to the trade deadline. So I think both of them want him back in those capacities. Are they necessarily looking forward to how awkward this whole thing is going to be? I can't guarantee you there. And is there a little bit of concern? I've always said, if Ben Simmons really wanted out of Philadelphia and they wanted to use their leverage to the max, because what they really did, they used their leverage, but they didn't. You had to really become a full, is this like an anti-cursing podcast? Whatever. Yeah, you had to really become a full pain in the ass to get your way off of the Sixers when he has 4 years left on his contract. And he only kind of became a partial pain in the ass, a little pain in the ass. He had to go the full Jimmy Butler. And I don't mean like playing, you know, taking the third stringers and beating Joel Embiid, because obviously if he could do that, we wouldn't be in this situation. But just being a real royal pain in the ass to get his way. And he's just not, that's not his personality. He didn't fully commit to being a pain. So he's left it in the simple truth of the fact that he tried to hold out. The only one who was really hurt by it was him because he was losing money. He had 4 years left on his contract, and he never fully committed to getting to working his way off of the team. So I think if there's one concern from the Sixers' perspective, it's, all right, well, now that he's back, could he try to really ratchet things up by acting out, by being a distraction? I don't think that's in his personality, but certainly I think you have to be at least a little bit worried about it, yeah.
This feels like a pretty real just capitulation from Ben Simmons and Clutch.
Yeah.
Where they are just not going to lose more money at this point. They've made that conscious decision that Ben does not want to keep losing $360,000 every single time the 76ers suit up for a game. Now, how much do we think this kills their leverage? Like, is this, I guess my first question would be, is it surprising to you that they have capitulated to the 76ers this quickly? And the second question is, like, I mean, how much does this kill their leverage at this point?
Yeah. I mean, am I surprised? Like, certainly I thought the end result was going to be that they would eventually have to cave. Because there's not, especially being away from the team, this wasn't going to get any more uncomfortable for Daryl Morey. The dynamics of this being a bad time to trade him were always going to be true. And once those checks started, you know, building up, I thought he was eventually going to report back. But I thought once he committed to holding out, he was going to be a little more committed than this, quite frankly. Because he really, I mean, we're talking about three preseason games. Like, this was not exactly the most dedicated of holdouts we've ever seen. So yeah, I'm surprised that he's back this quickly. I thought he was eventually going to come back. But I mean, quite frankly, like, what did he lose? Like, one out of the $8.25 million that they withheld. I thought he might give it a little stronger of a push than that. So I think we ended up in the place I was expecting. But yeah, and from the you know, leverage perspective, yeah, I think they have less leverage now. I think part of that comes back to, well, if he comes back and he's a distraction like James Harden or Jimmy Butler, he could regain a lot of that leverage and maybe even have more leverage than he did by holding out. But I just don't necessarily think that's in his personality to do so.
Yeah, and what I'm trying to figure out now is, at the end of the day, does this help anyone? Does this actually create a situation where by playing, does Ben Simmons help his value? Does playing help Ben Simmons' value, I guess? And I think it does. I think it does. Like, you would agree with that, right?
Like, his value, trade value-wise?
Yeah, like, actually helping to potentially raise his value. I mean, like, the other side of it is, like, you risk injury, obviously, and you risk, like, him just not being in shape and, like, not playing well, and then, like, this going worse on some level. But I don't know. Like, he's just such, like, a natural basketball player outside of the shooting aspect. Like, he's so ridiculous defensively because of his intellect and, like, instincts on that end. Like, he's such an unbelievable passer because he's kind of a basketball savant in a way to where, as long as he's in, like, reasonable shape, I think it's going to be fine, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, the injury caveat is obviously big there. You know, I do worry a little bit, like, if you have a mentally checked out Ben Simmons, what does that look like on the basketball court? We don't even really have to ask that. We saw that at LSU. He was not engaged. At LSU, he looked like a terrible defender there. Granted, he was also in the middle of a 2-3 zone, which wasn't suited for him. But I remember seeing that and having real red flags about his willingness to buy in defensively. So you could see a certainly a worse version of him, but I don't think that's really going to impact his trade value too much. I think NBA GMs would understand why he's not giving very much effort. We've all done this dance once or twice or a billion times before. You know, I think it's probably going to help marginally. You know, it'll remind people what he's good at. It will at least give the perception a little bit that this is a tenable situation for the Sixers if he's not acting out. But I think any move in either direction is probably going to be pretty marginal. Like, I think by and large, you know, how much trade value he will have and how likely it is he will move will be determined by what other people think, what other GMs think of Ben Simmons, and also the time of year as we get more players available for trade in December and closer to the trade deadline in February. I think it's mostly external forces with a little bit in either direction of him back on the court.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you mentioned the idea of this being like a full externally focused thing, right? To me, what this all comes down to are forces outside of the 76ers control. Like, someone's going to get hurt and it's going to push up the timeline of some other team, right? Yeah. Someone is going to start 0-8 this year in the NBA and go, oh, we need to shake things up. This roster is not it. Easiest way for us to shake things up is by going out and getting Ben Simmons, who's on a 4-year deal, and we can try and build around Ben and create a situation that makes more sense on the basketball court than what the 76ers have created for Ben. Given that, though, like, I kind of just feel like if I was the Sixers, like, I'd almost just say, look, you've reported. That's great. But we know where this is going. Like, I think there's a case for them to say, like, look, you've reported, we're not going to suspend you at this point and, like, not pay you. But we're also not going to play you for at least, like, a couple of weeks and do it under the guise of, like, getting his conditioning back or something. Like, do we think there's any chance that now that Ben has reported that they just decide, hey, we're just going to, like, hold off on playing him for a minute here?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. Hold on. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, okay, sorry. I bumped my headphones. Okay. yeah, I think it's a good question because this has taken so many different twists and turns that I have no real idea. You know, I think it would be odd for the Sixers to have spent so much time, you know, talking about how they want to get him back to not play him. I do agree with for like a couple weeks, you could see it maybe go that way, you know, because I think that you can make that argument to get his conditioning back up. But I think Daryl Morey would like to pick up some wins here. You know, I think they would like to not completely crater while, you know, while they figure out, because I think Daryl Morey is looking at it from a long-term perspective. I think he looks at it like it is external factors that are going to raise his trade value. We've got to get through not only a couple weeks into the season, but probably a couple of months into the season. I think he would like to win some games while they figure out that final trade destination. I think ultimately they do want him back on the basketball court, but you could see a couple weeks here where they, you know, got to get back in shape, got to get back in the flow of things. Maybe you want to give Tyrese Maxey a chance. You don't really want to be here anyway. But I think eventually he is going to get back.
Yeah, it's just really interesting because they have so many different competing, like, priorities, right? Like, one priority at this point is to trade Ben Simmons and just to move on, right? They may not say that publicly, but like I would imagine that they would be happy for them to be behind this as soon as they get a deal that is commensurate with Ben's value in their eyes. On another hand, like developing Tyrese Maxey as their long-term point guard, or at least someone that can play a reasonable facsimile of like a lead guard, I think that the jury remains out as to whether or not Tyrese will be like the long-term starter at point guard. Will he be the sixth man? Who knows, right? But getting minutes into him is an interesting competing priority. And then on top of it, I mean, this is a team that wants to win the title because they have Joel Embiid, and Joel Embiid is one of the, you know, six best players in the NBA. You can reasonably say that when you have Joel Embiid on your team, that you are in the title race. He's that good and that talented, especially when he is at his absolute best. And I mean, that quarter he played last night was pretty ridiculous. it showcased a lot of what we think of Ben in many ways as a potential player, Joel as a potential player that can lead a team to a title, despite the fact that it was a preseason game, right? So I just try and navigate all of these different things, and I just wonder how the 76ers make this work in a way that makes sense. Like, I think that getting wins and racking wins early is probably the most important thing, and Ben helps you rack wins early in the season.
There's no doubt. In the regular season, he is a very, very good player. And the two of them on the court together at the same time have always won the vast majority of their games in the regular season when they are healthy. And I do agree with you. I think this is a year where they're going to want that playoff seeding. Yeah. You know, I don't think it's as important as getting, you know, the best value long term in the trade. But really, the only reason you hurt, the only way you hurt his value significantly is with an injury. And it's tough to really predict that. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think winning games is certainly on their mind.
Yeah, I think that that's probably where the priority ends up being. Like having talked through this whole thing in these 17 minutes we've been podcasting, I would bet you that that's where this ends. What has covering this been like?
Honestly, it hasn't been quite as crazy as I would have expected, you know, in part because he hasn't been here. So you got through the awkwardness of the first couple of days of media day and of training camp, and then it sort of died down a little bit, and then Joel Embiid came out and said some stuff. And the thing with Joel Embiid is he's always about 20% more honest than he should be. And especially if you read between the lines, like, you can always sort of figure out what he's thinking. So that's entertaining. But it is, you know, it's just been, look, it grinds on you a little bit, I think. Like, it's a new update every day, a new leak, a new report, a new twist, new turn, a new reason why Ben Simmons wants out. You know, at some point it would be nice to be like, hey, let's find out what the end destination is. So we can actually start, because especially from my perspective, I cover more of the, you know, X's and O's on the basketball court kind of stuff more than I do the day-to-day drama of it. And I would love to be able to focus my attention on, all right, what's this product going to look like when we start getting towards the playoffs? And I think every way you talk about this team right now, there's a caveat of, oh, by the way, Ben Simmons probably isn't going to be here. Oh, by the way, you're probably going to try to trade him for a perimeter scoring option. And how does everything fit in once you do that? It has been on a holding pattern here for, you know, really 4 or 5 months.
Yeah, like, you just have no idea what this team is going to look like. Like, I remember talking to Robbie Calland during our over-unders podcast for the Eastern Conference, and Philadelphia came up, and I forget what the number was. Like, it might have been like 50.5 or something. Off the top of my head, I can't remember exactly what the number was. And I was just like, I have no idea. This is a pure pass. I don't even know who's going to be on this roster in 2 weeks. Like,
they are the walking ASCII shrug emoji.
And I feel like at this point, like, you can typically do a lot with roster building questions, right? But at this point, everything's been exhausted. Like, we know what the options are to some level. Like, what are the best Ben Simmons trades out there? How many times have you written that article? At least once in the offseason, right?
Yeah, and I mean, truthfully, we probably haven't focused too much on it because it's clearly he's not going to take it right now, and he's going to wait it out. So, you know, we'll be having this conversation again for the next month and a half. It is, yeah, yep.
Like, it's just kind of crazy to me. It's just trying to navigate all of the different factors here with Ben Simmons. And then I mean, look, like, how hard did you laugh when you saw that he just showed up last night?
Oh, I was, like, legitimately driving home on my way back from the preseason game. And, yeah, that was a very much a, this is right out of a sitcom. There's no way this actually happened. And it probably took me a good hour for it to even really sink in. Like, wow, this really is the way this is going down. There was probably a legitimate vocal laugh, yeah.
Oh, no, like, you say it's out of a sitcom. Like, Seinfeld did this. Like, George Costanza just, like, randomly showed up to work at one point and sat down at the table and just acted like nothing was wrong and started laughing at other people's jokes. And then the boss is like, wait, is that Costanza? Like, why is he here? Like, it's like we often as writers say that things are out of a sitcom, right? Because it's so ridiculous that it couldn't possibly happen in real life. I mean, this is literally out of a sitcom.
This is out of sitcom. This
literally happened. Like, I saw that you wrote, like, Mike Levin. I think that he's actually writing this for a TV show he's writing. I mean, it really is that. Like, this is actually what's happening with 76ers organization. Like, at some point, I want, someone almost should write a movie about the last 6 years of the 76ers, but it's too complicated in terms of plot for a movie. Like, it has to be a mini series of, like, this is, there just has been no normalcy with this organization for so many years. And it's staggering to me. The whole thing is so staggering to me. Like, Brian Colangelo happened how many years ago? It feels like it happened like 8 years ago. I would guess that was 3.5 years ago. Something like that?
Yeah, it was 2018. And by the way, when we were going over the weird stuff, I yada-yadded right over that. Like, there's been so much weird stuff that I forgot about the team's general manager operating burner accounts and trashing his players and releasing medical information publicly on Twitter. I completely forgot about it because so much other crazy stuff has happened. And most of the stuff, like, if you wrote it for a sitcom, I'm pretty sure they would just throw it away, and that's not realistic. This is not how sports teams are operated. No doubt in my mind. No doubt.
Yeah. Like, I just don't even, I can't with 76ers at this point. I haven't asked you this question, but how do you see this Ben Simmons thing ending? Like, do you have, like, a team that you think makes the most sense for this?
I mean, I think Minnesota has the most interest and makes the most sense as a fit for Ben Simmons. The question is, how can you drag a third team into it, because they don't have what the Sixers want? And that's really the part that I think, you know, that's why we can sit here and we can talk about all of the options and teams who have been interested. I think by and large, they don't have what the Sixers are looking for. You need something in the status quo to change so you can then take one of those teams. And I think Minnesota is the team that I think has the most interest and logically should have the most interest in him. And then how can you take the assets the Sixers want on a third team along with Minnesota and make this into something that works for all parties? That's partly why, like, focusing on the details of a trade, I think, are pretty, it's mostly a waste of time, because I don't think most of the assets coming back are what the Sixers will end up getting. Like I said, I think the status quo needs to change, but I do think Minnesota is, I would have them as a favorite destination if they can rope a third team into it.
Yeah, like, logically, they make the most sense, right? Because playing Ben Simmons with Karl Towns seems like a perfect blend of both of their skills, right? Like, if you were now Sachin Gupta, who certainly has a history with Daryl Morey, having worked for him at one point, the king of the trade machine as well, he should be able to create these complicated 3 and 4 team deals in a way that maybe other general managers, although most front offices at this point have someone in their front office that can create and mine interesting, you know, 3 and 4 team complicated maneuvers out of, you know, thin air. I kind of think that it makes the most sense. Like, on the level of, it makes the most sense on the court. There's a relationship between the general managers. There are two very creative minds at the helms of both of these organizations. It makes the most sense. Obviously, like, you know, Mark Lohr and Alex Rodriguez are going to have to be in favor of it. And I feel like we don't really know what their, you know, idea of ownership is going to look like with the Timberwolves at this point. But I think I agree with you that, like, that melding now is the most it's just the most sensible thing to me. Like I can wrap my head around that one the easiest, I think, is where I'm at.
Yeah. No, that to me is, I've pretty consistently been the most natural fit. It's just, like I said, something in the status quo needs to change so you can get a third team in there so that the Sixers can get more of what they want. And look, I know Daryl Morey would love for Dame Lillard to start off and the Blazers to start off, you know, 4-8 and maybe Dame to change his mind. I think you have to right now throw that out. Not that it's impossible to happen, but it is, you know, there's too much that would have to happen between now and then for that to change. So
yeah, like it seems like they were hoping that one of Bradley Beal or Damian Lillard would come available at some point. And like you said, like it doesn't seem like that's going to happen. I think they wanted either a genuine star or they want someone to just like give them all of the draft picks on planet Earth so that when one of those two come available, they have, if not one of the best offers, hopefully the best offer to potentially put in front of either Portland or Washington. To me, again, that makes the most sense. I talked about that with John Hollinger when he was on and we kind of broke down potential fits here. Yeah, I mean, it's a weird deal.
No, I think any trade they make now will, like, they will be mindful of, hey, what happened? Do we still have the assets? Are we recouping up a couple more assets along with a good player so we can pursue that down the line? I don't think they'll ever fully take their mind off of Damian Lillard, because I think a lot of people around the league look at it and say, look, he's fully committed now. He's probably a little more loyal than he should be. He really doesn't want to make that move or push his way out, but there's always that chance it happens. How, you know, and when you start looking at it, like, will the Sixers ever have more draft picks than Oklahoma City to trade? No, but they have something that Oklahoma City can't offer, and that's the fact that Damian Lillard would actually want to be there and could compete for a title. So I think they look at it and they'd say, look, we're asset-wise, trade talent-wise, trade capital-wise, we're in a pretty good spot relative to other contenders. How can we improve that spot so that if that does become available, I think they will keep that in mind for sure.
Yeah, it's just, again, the 76ers with Daryl Morey, they have one of the most forward-thinking, like, chess-playing, if you want to say, like, the chess versus checkers thing, you know, from one move to the next versus seeing the whole board and seeing where everything stands league wide. They just have in Daryl Morey someone who's going to see the whole picture and someone who is absolutely going to be playing the long game as much as he's playing the short game in trying to win a title. So, yeah, I would think that any move that they make is going to be with an attempt to not only win now, but also try to keep everything open for them long term to be able to play in the superstar pool. I mean, do you have any final thoughts on this whole ridiculous thing? I mean, it's hard to get more ridiculous than just showing up to the Wells Fargo Center and
they didn't
banging
even
on
know.
The door.
It's incredible. It's incredible. No, I don't know if I have too many more thoughts. Like, reportedly, he went through meetings with Morey and Doc Rivers. I believe he went through a physical. So I don't know exactly how many days that COVID protocol is after being tested. He got tested yesterday, obviously before the game, or on Monday evening before the preseason game. So this could get really awkward really quickly, I guess. I don't know, or it could not. He could stay away. Who knows? But yeah, it's not going to get normal anytime soon. That's for sure.
I mean, like, do we know if he's vaccinated? Like, is that going to be a story at some point here?
I don't know for sure. I would be a little surprised if he did, but that's just if he wasn't, I mean, I would be surprised if he wasn't vaccinated, but that is just speculation. I don't know that for sure.
Yeah. Cause a lot of people, like, it's come out publicly, like if they are or not. And I just haven't seen if Ben has been public in terms of his, vaccination status. But one person who has been very public in terms of their vaccination status is Kyrie Irving, and Derek and I are going to talk about Kyrie in a second here, because oh boy, what a nightmare that is. And we'll take a quick commercial break first, though. Okay, we're back. We're going to talk a little bit about Kyrie Irving, because the following statement has been released by Brooklyn Nets general manager Sean Marks. Given the evolving nature of the situation and after thorough deliberation, we have decided Kyrie Irving will not play or practice with the team until he is eligible to be a full participant. Kyrie has made a personal choice, and we respect his individual right to choose. Currently, the choice restricts his ability to be a full-time member of the team, and we will not permit any member of our team to participate with part-time availability. It is imperative that we continue to build chemistry as a team and remain true to our long-established values of toughness and sacrifice. Our championship goals for the season have not changed, and to achieve these goals, each member of our organization must pull in the same direction. We are excited for the start of the season and look forward to a successful campaign that will make the borough of Brooklyn proud. That's a firmer statement than I would have expected from a team trying to get a player to be vaccinated. I'm good for Brooklyn, I think, is where I'm at. Yep. Like, I get why... No, let me rephrase that. I don't really understand Kyrie's reasoning for not wanting to be vaccinated. I don't think he's really been clear about it to this point. He's talked around it a lot, but I don't think he's really given like a cogent, coherent reasoning. Like Jonathan Isaac, agree, disagree, whatever, and I certainly disagree with him. Like he has given strong, cogent thoughts on why he is not vaccinated. Kyrie hasn't really done that in any way. And I am very intrigued to see how this looks for a Brooklyn team that is, in my opinion, the title favorite now. And they're losing one of their three best players, one of the 30 best players in the league, because he will not get vaccinated. It's a very interesting decision from Brooklyn at this point.
Yeah, and quite frankly, I applaud them for the decision, and I applaud them for the way they worded that statement. You know, okay, it's a personal decision, which I sort of push back on there, but at least they said it's a personal decision, but it has consequences. And I wish that there's more consequences on the public health aspect of that personal decision and the social responsibility aspect of that decision, but it also has an impact on your teammates, on your team, on your community, on your ability to compete, on the fans who want to watch. There is a cost. If you are so convinced that you know more than all the doctors and whatnot recommending it, there is a consequence to that freedom. And I give them credit for pointing that out. I think one of my main disappointments with the league at large are how many players are, well, that's a personal decision. I'm not going to get into their personal business. It's really not. It's a like I said, a community, there's a social responsibility to this. And I've been a little disappointed in the NBA and the Players Association for not taking a stronger stance, for not setting a better example for the community at large. But I give the Nets credit for that. And it talk about fascinating. Like how long will I know a lot of us joke that, oh, he might retire. Well, he's not going to retire. There's a lot of money on. I don't think he's wired a little differently. There's a lot of money on the line here. But how long can he sit out? Will he sit out the entire year for this? Will they get through to him? I mean, look, I think maybe the most interesting aspect of this is that, you know, Kevin Durant was involved in that decision. You know, James Harden was involved in that decision. And they still came out that hard on that. I was a little bit surprised. I thought there was a very good chance he was going to play road games and practice with them when they were on the road. I'm very surprised by this.
Yeah, I'm a little bit surprised for sure. And I totally agree with you that this is not just a personal decision. It is a public health decision. And I think Kyrie and everyone should get vaccinated for the good of public health, not necessarily for themselves. And don't think about this as selfishly as it is. You know, just here in Victoria, here in Australia, like there have been outbreaks of COVID. And as more people have gotten vaccinated, the number of people getting COVID has now dropped for the first time. It helps. Vaccinations are good. What I would say about Kyrie now, and first let me start on the Players Association, because I think that like the part that frustrates me about the Players Association is not their ability to go out and get people vaccinated. Over 90% of the league is vaccinated, according to reports from Shams to from everyone else, right? I would venture that number is even higher now. And I think it's a genuinely impressive feat from the Players Association that they have gotten this much buy-in. The problem I have with the Players Association is that they are letting the non-vaccinated dictate the narrative in a very real way. I think, and part of that is on the media for covering the non-vaccinated in a disproportionate way to the vaccinated, right? Like during media day, one of the things I specifically tried to do was lift up the voices of people like Desmond Bain, Carl Towns. I'm trying to think who else made like very firm positive statements in terms of the vaccine, in terms of, as opposed to, I guess I would say, discussing the controversy of the negative non-vaccinated group, because I do think that we as media members have the power to shape the narrative in a real way, but also we have the power to put public pressure on people not getting vaccinated, and that public pressure seems to have worked in the case of Andrew Wiggins. And I don't even know if it's the duty of the media to put public pressure on an individual to get vaccinated, but I'm sure the Warriors are happy at this point that Andrew Wiggins is vaccinated and is going to be able to play in home games. So I think it's a complicated deal. I just wish that the Players Association would be more capable of controlling someone who is a vice president, by the way, of the Players Association, yep. Kyrie Irving, who is genuinely in their leadership group. I wish that the Players Association was more capable of keeping some of the conversations that Kyrie is having private, and thus not representing the whole of the body, which again is over 90% vaccinated, as being like, you know, a body full of idiots, or like these non-vaccinated people being able to control the narrative, because I think that they are right now, unfortunately. Like, it feels like the only time people talk about the vaccination issue is that we talk about Kyrie, we talk about people getting vaccinated after being holdouts, or we talk about the non-vaccinated in the case of Kyrie. And I think that it's probably a bit unfair to the Players Association given the work they've done, but having said that, it's a real story that Kyrie is not going to be able to play fucking home games, and that Kyrie is now like legitimately, seemingly not a member of the Brooklyn Nets. This is like in The Social Network when, or really in Facebook, I guess, but specifically that scene in The Social Network where Eduardo goes to Mark and says like, oh, it'll be like I'm not a part of Facebook. And then Sean Parker comes out of nowhere and says, it's not like you won't be a part of Facebook. You're not a part of Facebook. This is not just like he's not a part of the Brooklyn Nets. He's essentially not a part of the Brooklyn Nets. They're not letting him practice. They're not letting him play.
Yeah. And I mean, going back to the Players Association, I agree that they get some credit for the vaccination rate. I think my big pushback was, you know, when they have spoken, there was a little bit of like righteous indignation that like, hey, don't criticize us. We've got our 90% vaccinated. Like, worry about the general population. It's like, okay, but you've got, you know, Draymond Green saying just completely ridiculous stuff. And then you've got LeBron James out there retweeting it and saying, I couldn't have said it any better. You've got Kyrie Irving out here saying what he wants. And there just aren't enough people pushing back against that. So I think the Players Association could be doing more to sort of lead the way to amplify the positive messages that they can spread, rather than being like, hey, don't criticize us. We've got 90% vaccinated. The combination of the star power that has either said or amplified or refrained from saying, refrained from countering, along with the comment from the Players Association, which I don't have off the top of my head, but it really did come off, like I said, like indignation that they're even being questioned about it. I think they could have done a little more. And I agree with you, the vaccination rate is fine, but there's just most of the prominent stars. And I think Damian Lillard was one who was pretty strong in support of vaccinations. But at most, there's too many either outspoken or supportive that are have star power. And it's a little disappointing.
In the case of Kyrie specifically, so Sam Amick, our colleague over at The Athletic, he has just published a longer story on Kyrie and all of the you know, kind of specifics regarding his situation. And it seems like within there, at the very least, he has written that the 76ers currently have no interest in pursuing a trade of Ben Simmons for Kyrie Irving, which, like, on the court, I understand why people bring up this idea of a trade. And, like, it fits very well. Like, Kyrie would be perfect with Joel Embiid, and Ben Simmons would be, like, a perfect perimeter defender for guys like Kevin Durant and James Harden. Like, it would actually really work. But how do you trust Kyrie at this point is kind of my question. Like, yeah. You can't – I think that what this whole saga proves is, like, I don't know how you trust Kyrie until he gets vaccinated and is showing that he's willing to do something for someone else, because this entire situation from Kyrie to me just reeks of selfishness at the end of the day. He can make the case that he doesn't feel he wants to get vaccinated. And, like, look, again, I disagree with him, but I understand to, like, on a logical level, I understand that he does not want to get vaccinated. It's not the decision I would make. It's not the decision I did make, but, like, I get that part of it. What I can't get past, and what I think that probably his teammates can't get past, and the members of the Brooklyn Nets organization can't get past, is that all he has to do is get vaccinated and he can be a part of the team and he can help us toward our shared goal. And at the end of the day, like, team sports is about sharing in an experience to strive toward a singular common goal. And, like, I'm sorry to get, like, all like college basketball coach in his 60s preachy, but, like, I think on some level it does feel as simple as that, right? Like, Kyrie Irving is not willing to just be a part of the team. He cares more about himself and his own, I guess, thoughts and theories on the vaccine that are very misguided at the end of the day, than he does about sharing in the common goal to try and win a title. And
sure. And I mean, that whole analogy right there spreads perfectly to the entire vaccine debate and about personal freedom versus social responsibility. That being part of a team to help with a collective goal is quite literally what we're talking about from a basketball perspective and both and a public health perspective.
Yeah. And I mean, I'll tell you, like, from a public health perspective, like, that's the exact messaging. Like, I don't know exactly what the messaging has been in the United States in terms of getting vaccinated, but, like, that is the exact messaging that the Victorian government here in Melbourne, like, has said, right? Like, they literally say, like, be a part of the team, do your part, like, get vaccinated. I mean, Kyrie Irving is not being a part of the team to help public health, like, let alone the Brooklyn Nets. Like, he's going to forfeit, like, if he doesn't get vaccinated, he's going to forfeit $30+ million this year. And that's his right. Like, whatever, he can do that. But I just can't, I don't know. Like, it's hard for me to wrap my head around this entire thing. Or is he going to lose half of his, is it going to be like half of his salary? I can't remember what
I think it's lose. Half. I think he would lose 18. It's not my finances. So I don't necessarily care all that much, but I think I read half.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, where do we think this leaves Brooklyn as a team at this point? We'll close on that.
Oh, I think they're, like, still the favorites. I think they're still the favorites. And I honestly feel guilty saying that with what Milwaukee just did, but I would still pick them. I think it's obviously a lot closer. There's a lot more ways I can then see Milwaukee coming out of the East. But I think that would still leave. I mean, look, Kevin Durant and James Harden, that's put those two on a team. They're going to be the favorite for a lot of years. And I think they've added some needed depth there. I would still pick them as the favorites.
Yeah, I would as well. I would still pick them as the favorites as long as James Harden and Kevin Durant are healthy. What the Kyrie injury does, though, is it gives them much less margin for error in terms of being able to withstand injury at this point. If one of those two goes down, they are now no longer the favorites. If Kyrie was there and James Harden was around and Kevin Durant was around, one of those, I guess that James Harden could get hurt. If Kevin Durant gets hurt, I think that Brooklyn is probably no longer the favorite. Like, if it was just Kyrie and James Harden, I think I would pick Milwaukee. But this gives them no margin for error now in terms of injury. And I will be interested to see what Philadelphia or what Brooklyn, I'm sorry, does with their starting lineup now. Like, I think that there are some really interesting things that they could do there. Like, you probably still bring Patty Mills off the bench, I would think, but maybe you don't, right? Maybe you bring, you know, it's probably something like James Harden, Joe Harris, Kevin Durant. Like, maybe, I mean, do you start Nick Claxton at this point? Maybe it's like Nick Claxton and Blake Griffin are your starters. Maybe it's, you know, maybe you play Cam Thomas more minutes, which, by the way, like, as someone who does the draft and, like, enjoys the draft, like, where are you at on Cam Thomas?
You know, when I was talking about him at 28 for the Sixers, I felt like when you can get I had a very confident NBA skill in him. And when you can get an NBA skill like that, I had some interest. I think I probably had Butler ahead of him, and Butler's looked real good here in the preseason. But in terms of, you know, he's an archetype that I don't necessarily gravitate towards frequently. But I had pretty much confidence that he was going to be able to create his own shot and create a shot off of a screen on the perimeter at an NBA level. So I had some interest in him that I think more or less, like, if he was in the top 20, I probably would have picked him apart to death.
Yeah.
But I think he had some very obvious NBA skill in there.
Yeah, no, I agree. He's been, I assumed he would score on some level in the NBA. It was just, what else does he do? And I don't know if he can do anything else, but he's been even better as a scorer than what I thought. I would venture that they probably start Bruce Brown now that I think about it. Like, it'll probably be James Harden, Joe Harris, Kevin Durant, Bruce Brown, and probably Blake Griffin, I would venture.
I think that's what it was last night, yeah.
Yeah, just kind of thinking through it a little bit more, and then you bring Patty Mills off the bench, you bring Cam Thomas off the bench, you know, Javon Carter, if you need a change of pace at point with some point of attack, defensive skills, like Nick Claxton and LaMarcus Aldridge, depending on the, you know, makeup of the opposing team's front court. There are a lot of different things that you could do with the Brooklyn Nets at this stage. I'm very interested in the way that their season goes because, I don't even know that I want to dive into, like, the whole chemistry thing. But, yeah, I mean, this can't exactly help chemistry. And I wonder if Nick Wright's kind of reporting on Fox Sports that Brooklyn was kind of willing to listen on Kyrie. Like, I wonder, you know, how real that is, you know? Like, I would think that if they are, now that they're in this position, I would almost guarantee they're probably willing to listen on Kyrie, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, there. When you have Durant and Harden, you don't know how long that core is going to be around with the finance of it, with just the personalities of it, with the aging of it. I mean, the fact that, you know, James Harden looked human from an injury perspective last year gives you a little more pause than maybe you would previously have. Every year you've got to try to win in the championship. And look, it's so tough because you don't know how long these COVID restrictions are going to last. You don't know whether or not Kyrie could have a change of heart when the games start being played. But, you know, as we've seen here now, I mean, we've been going into too many winners here, but as we've seen, winners can sometimes be unpredictable or can sometimes be worse in terms of the spread. Hopefully that's mitigated by the fact that more and more of the population either has immunity built up from having had COVID or has the vaccine. But I don't think anybody truly knows what the next 4 months of, you know, infection data is going to look like. So I don't think you can rely on New York relaxing their restriction. And I don't think you can necessarily rely on Kyrie changing his decision. So I think you have to at least listen to it. I don't know. But by the same token, like, Durant and Harden are good enough where if you can just get Kyrie back to playing basketball in April or May.
Yeah.
You might not even need him. It's real tough. There's so much at play that it is certainly tough to debate. And yeah. Also, you have to figure out whether or not Kevin Durant would greenlight the trade.
Yeah, that's true too. I mean, he signed with Kevin Durant there at the end of the day,
yep.
And they've already moved one of those guys that signed with them in DeAndre Jordan. But yeah, I think that Kevin Durant is going to be like one of the key decision makers, along with Sean Marks and Joe Tsai, on this entire thing moving forward. Again, like you mentioned earlier, and I feel like we probably haven't done this enough, props to Sean Marks. Like, Sean Marks, like, you know, really kind of put it out there today. Like, he said that the organization was left with no choice in quotes, no choice but to send him away. You know, he has a choice to make, and he made his choice. My job here is to make what we deem as the best decision and best choices for the organization moving forward as a whole. They're not always ones that are going to be met with open arms and a thumbs up. These are hard decisions, just like I'm sure it wasn't easy for Kyrie either to have and to make that decision to not be around his teammates. Like, and
they definitely did have a choice. I would say this was the harder of the two paths for them to go in. Because, look, do you want anyone to be a part-time player? No, but it's the NBA. Like, players are in and out of the lineup all the time. You just had, you know, a couple years ago where the Raptors won with Kawhi, and Kawhi was missing every third game. You can certainly have players in and out of the lineup. He would have helped them win basketball games throughout the regular season. He would have helped them fight for the number one seed, and certainly when the playoffs roll around. That was, I think, the harder of the two paths for them to take. And like I said, I'm surprised that they went that way. And I do give them a little bit of credit for that.
Yeah, I do too. Derek, do you have any other, important takes that you have to get off before we get out of here?
Oh, this is basketball. There's no, I have no important takes at all. Okay. Here's what I'll say, because we rarely talked about the Sixers. By that, I mean, like, we spend it all talking about Ben. I've been intrigued by Isaiah Joe. I think he has looked real good here in the preseason. I don't know where you had him coming into the 2020 draft. He has looked very good. I think he can shoot the heck out of the ball with a lot of the shot versatility and a lot of range and a pretty quick release. But he has held up for a guy who looks like he weighs about 6'4", 160 pounds. And I know he's listed at more than that. I don't believe it. I've stood next to him. For a guy who looks like he's about 6'4", 160, he holds his own defensively better than I would have expected. He's the one guy that I would point out and say I'm pretty intrigued by what he can offer, especially when you're talking about Joel Embiid and the shooting you need around that.
Yeah, I had Isaiah Joe ranked as my last guarantee guy that year. Like, and by guarantee guy, I mean like guys taken in the second round who should get guaranteed contracts. So,
Which he did.
Yeah, liked him exactly where the 76ers took him. The only reason I didn't like him more was because of the injury history. His injury history is not great. If you go back through the years, had he not had that, I probably would have had him as a first round pick. But given the frame combination with the injury history, I had some pretty real worries about the way that the early portion of his career would go. And I would say I'm not surprised that while he's healthy, he's shooting the shit out of the ball and has played like a critical role in, you know, hopefully at least earning a bench spot early. Like I would think that based off of, cause I've watched 76ers twice now in the preseason. Like I would think that he's probably like a lower end rotation for them. Like right now,
I think he's earned it. Yeah. And I whenever you say that, you go, okay, well, who are you bumping out? And Korkmaz had a really good game the other day. It might be like Matisse Thybulle's been injured. He has a shoulder injury. He hasn't really been playing. I think they could use his skill set. Might end up being Shake Milton. I could see Shake, but I think based on merit and quite frankly based on upside and long term future with the team, I think Isaiah Joe has earned a spot in the rotation, and I don't think I expected that when the preseason started.
Yeah, I mean, look, like Isaiah was like pretty sneaky good, if I remember correctly, in the G League last year, right?
Yeah, he was solid. Yep.
Like there was
wasn't Paul Reed good, but he was solid.
Yeah, like he only played like a couple of games, but like I thought that I remembered hearing that like he looked good in those couple of games. Like, am I losing my mind there? Maybe I'm wrong.
No, he looked pretty good. Yeah.
Okay. And then he was really good.
My thing was always that I just like physically I didn't think he was going to be able to hold up because, like I said, he's listed at like 6'4", 175. I'm not buying that at all. And I just don't. I didn't think he was going to be able to hold up defensively with that frame, and he has looked. Like I think he moves his feet pretty well. I think he anticipates pretty well. He competes pretty well, and he's still always going to be a, you know, a buck 60 or a buck 75 or whatever he officially is, and that's going to be a hindrance. But he has definitely been better defensively, and that was far and away the biggest concern.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I feel like I said G League. I meant Summer League.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. That
my he looked good in Summer League a couple months ago. Yeah.
Yeah. He just shot the hell out of it. But like, if I remember correctly, I felt like it was just all like catch and shoot threes. But he like makes catch and shoot threes at a really high level. So of course that's going to work. Right. Always been like a sneaky good passer. And the thing about his defensive instincts were his instincts were always really good defensively. It was just whether or not he could hold up the point of attack. I still have like real concerns about him holding up the point of attack against like starting high level guards. Like I would think that someone like Damian Lillard will just like blow through him physically. Right.
Sure.
But as a rotation player, that's fine. And that the whole thing for young guys that are taken in the second round is like have a building block, get on the court and see what happens from there. And I think that can happen here.
Yeah, no, I agree. And like you said, he defensive fundamentals, he seems fine. Played under Eric Musselman. So he has some NBA sort of experience there. He's been a pleasant surprise for sure.
Well, and Mus is going to like get on his ass. So he's going to be able to.
Yeah.
You know, deal with overcoming adversity on some level. Okay, Derek, tell the people where they can find your work as this whole Ben Simmons disaster continues to unfold.
Oh, at Derek Bodner NBA on Twitter, but just subscribe to The Athletic. We will all weigh in over there.
The saddest moment of the preseason for me was when Grant Riller missed some time.
Yeah.
And I'm very sorry that you're not going to get to see Grant Riller up close for the next couple of, I think it's going to be like a month, right? Something like that.
Yeah. Something in that range. Yep.
So, maybe I'll have you on in a month again. Once Grant Riller starts playing 35 minutes a night in the NBA and dominating,
okay.
For
there
the
we
76ers,
go. There we go.
Which will,
if he does that, I will definitely jump on. Yep.
which will definitely happen, under every circumstances, it will definitely happen. This has been the Game 3 Podcast, though. Please remember, rate, review, subscribe, do everything you can to support the show. We will be back later this week with some NBA draft stuff with Matt Penny, some Boston sports stuff, because I am all in on the Red Sox now after their celebration last night. So Penny and I will talk about that. And we'll talk more about just some prospects. We're going to talk about guards, particularly in this draft. So until next time, we'll talk soon. Bye.